need you, those that we haven't heard from, let us hear from you right now. There is time.
And we're going to have to back out of here to play this promo. So thank you so very much. This is 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org.
The WBAI Community Advisory Board will be having meetings every Sunday in February, starting at 1 p.m. at WBAI's office at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, between Hoyt and Bond Streets. The possibility of the loss of local control of all WBAI programming remains possible with the 6 lease management options for WBAI on the table. The CAB will continue to act to prevent that from happening, but we need your help. Again, every Sunday in February, starting at 1 p.m., the WBAI Community Advisory Board will be meeting at 388 Atlantic Avenue to discuss the matters and hear your thoughts on programming.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report, and we are asking you to go to the phone to support independent media. And today we bring you, as the economy is in crisis in this country, an excerpt of the documentary called Heist, Who Stole the American Dream? This is a remarkable documentary, Who Stole the American Dream, called Heist. It's narrated by Tom Hartman.
Massive job losses, record home foreclosures and devaluations, lost retirement savings. The mess we're in today did not begin on Wall Street. Long before the financial collapse, the dismantling of government regulation was well underway. Vast sums of wealth were already being channeled from the paychecks and bank accounts of everyday taxpayers and into the pockets of the super rich and corporate CEOs.
This has been the greatest wealth transfer in the history, at least of American kind, if not mankind.
This is class warfare.
I think it's scaring the hell out of everybody. I think everybody should be scared.
In a real-life development dwarfing the most elaborate conspiracy fiction, all of these consequences are the end result of a brilliantly executed coup. Everyday human lives, the common dreams of people everywhere, were never a factor. All that mattered was profit. Who did it? How were they able to pull it off right before our eyes? This is the story of the biggest heist in American history.
My grandmother was born into the world of boom and bust, as it had been from 1794 until the Great Depression.
Once upon a time, we knew in this country we had a Great Depression, and we had a stock market crash in 1929, followed by several years of 25% unemployment, of corporations declaring bankruptcy, of people in the streets on bread lines.
I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people.
In the depths of the Great Depression, President Roosevelt's New Deal put millions back to work, provided unemployment insurance, created Social Security, and made it easier for workers to join unions and bargain collectively.
What FDR and that government had the balls to do was enact legislation that really took command of the Wall Street environment and said, you know what, you can't speculate with other people's money.
Coming out of the Great Depression, just 3 laws fundamentally altered the course of America's history. The first one, FDIC insurance, make it safe to put money in banks. The second one, Glass-Steagall, try to separate the risk-taking on Wall Street from your local community bank. And the third one, SEC regulations provide some cops to watch the robbers. Out of that, what we got was 50 years of economic peace. no financial panics, no meltdowns. And during that 50 years, we built a strong and prosperous middle class in America.
After World War II, the New Deal evolved into a great deal for the American people. Growing prosperity and social justice seemed to be everyone's destiny as the U.S. economy exploded into the greatest economic machine in history.
There has never been anything like the America of today, a nation so productive that the typical worker's family is able to afford conveniences and luxuries available only to the privileged few elsewhere.
We had the home ownership rate in this country going from about 44% on the eve of World War II to 64% by the mid-60s. We had the blue-collar middle class, and entrepreneurs did beautifully. Corporate America did fine.
The New Deal established that ordinary people had the right to protect themselves against corporate abuse. The early 70s expanded those safeguards with the creation of agencies like the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, whose mission was to protect workers. The Environmental Protection Agency was created to protect human health and the environment.
Regulation is nothing more than the imposition of a set of rules to prevent the free market from behaving in a way which is contrary to the common good.
A decision was reached by corporate America that working with unions, working with government to improve the standard of living for all people was not the right thing to do.
Big business doesn't like the government to tell it what to do. They don't want anybody to interfere with their ability to make money in the way that they see fit.
In 1971, corporate leaders began to orchestrate a detailed battle plan to eliminate any government policies that might stand between them and profits. The plan was laid out in an influential memo called Attack on American Free Enterprise System.
Lewis Powell was a well-respected citizen of Richmond, Virginia. He was a corporate lawyer, a partner in a prestigious corporate law firm, and friends with an executive at the Chamber of Commerce named Eugene Sidnor. And Sidnor asked his friend if he would draft a position statement that he could submit to the Chamber of Commerce that would then sort of form the framework for how to make the organization more able to confront what they thought was a growing threat to business interests.
Powell's memo laid out a strategy to radically alter public perceptions, ensuring that big business interests would dominate public policy. Powell advocated a vast purge of liberal elements in society. He saw how corporate money could own the media and talk louder than organized labor and consumer protection groups. But for Powell, a future Supreme Court justice, the real end game was business control of law and politics.
You see this memorandum bouncing from desk to desk, from boardroom to boardroom around corporate America, inspiring and inciting business leaders to find a way to get involved and to join what they had already, many of them had already perceived to be a battle for the soul of America and a battle to save free enterprise.
To make their point, the Chamber of Commerce created very clever advertising to influence public opinion.
What can be done to repair the strength of the nation's economy and restore individual freedom?
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the recently formed Elite Business Roundtable, an exclusive club of CEOs, joined forces to lobby Congress and push their agenda with major campaign contributions. Their goal? To buy congressional votes to implement a corporate makeover of America.
You had massive lobbying beginning in 76, 77, 78 for cutting taxes on rich people, trickle-down economics, cut capital gains taxes, cut dividend taxes, cut income taxes, and the economy will flourish. Some of the Democrats start drinking the Kool-Aid along with the Republicans.
Next, big business set its sights on the biggest threat to their bottom line, the wages and benefits of the American workforce, especially union members who, starting in the 1930s, had won bargaining power for wages, working conditions, and benefits. But instead of negotiation, big business wanted control. Lewis Powell, the Powell Memo. Businessmen should use their financial muscle to shape the politics of the country. Nor should there be reluctance to penalize politically those who oppose it. By 1978, business outspent organized labor 3-1 to defeat a bill that would have made it easier for workers to join unions. This was a critical turning point, setting in motion the decline of organized labor as a major political force and the voice of working Americans. Douglas Frazier, president of the United Auto Workers, said in a magazine interview at the time, "I believe leaders of the business community, with few exceptions, have chosen to wage a one-sided class war today in our country, a war against working people, the unemployed, the poor, the minorities, the very young and the very old, and even many in the middle class of our society."
One of the geniuses of the right in the United States is they funded these 12 big Washington organizations, Heritage, Cato, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, organizations that range from quite principled, Cato, to complete shills, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, for the causes of their donors.
Heirs to six of the largest family fortunes in the United States use their private foundations to fund organizations that would promote unregulated markets.
One notable one would be the role of Joseph Kurz at the Heritage Foundation, who constantly cited the Powell Memo as one of the reasons that he was inspired to create a conservative pro-business think tank that he called Heritage.
Well, Heritage is a conservative think tank, and if you read the back of our business cards, it says, "Building an America where freedom, opportunity, prosperity, and civil society flourish," and that's Heritage's goals.
Working in unison, the six families used their private foundations to shape business schools and manipulate the media. Most of all, they wanted to restructure government to serve their own interests.
They're not think tanks. These are not academic research organizations. These are ideological marketing organizations. They're no different than the people who persuaded young men when I was a young man that we should put Brill Cream in our hair. You know, add grease to your hair. It'll make you attractive to the girls.
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power.
Even in the Great Depression, when 25% of Americans were out of work, you had these apologists for free market fundamentalism argue against increased government spending, increased regulation, strengthening the hands of unions, a stronger safety net. The same thing is happening today.
The motive was ideological, putting millions and millions of dollars into funding right-wing ideas factories. But then those ideas needed to get pushed out into the media.
Well, the kind of narratives that Republicans have used and conservatives have used have come out of 40 years and tens of billions of dollars worth of efforts by conservative think tanks to try to develop just the right kind of words to use.
Well, Republicans were the ones that pushed through President Bush's tax policy in 2001 that lowered the death tax.
The broad question of how it was that the right managed to get people who shouldn't have voted for them to vote for them is obviously the million-dollar question. But when it came to something like the estate tax, well, the way the law was originally written, no one was affected by the estate tax except the extremely rich. But, of course, the way they talked about it was brilliant.
And it's the most unfair tax there is. They've already paid taxes on this money when they made it. They paid capital gains taxes along the way. And here we are at death, and we're going to hit them again.
When you say death tax, what you say is, wait a minute. Now they're taxing you for dying? For God's sakes, they tax me when I make the money, they tax me when I spend it. Now they're going to tax me for dying. Now, I've had enough. And what the Republicans understood was you test those kind of things until you find that kind of language that really resonates with people.
My plan will give businesses tax incentives that result in plant expansion, greater output, and more jobs. It'll remove regulations that shoot up the cost of doing business. Strong creative leadership can restore America as the mightiest industrial nation on earth.
The time is now for Reagan.
It all comes together in the election of 1980, where the right had built up this powerful political and financial and intellectual infrastructure, And it all comes together under Reagan.
I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly.
So by the time Reagan takes office, there is an army of policy wonks who have a whole game plan that can be put into effect very, very quickly to deregulate everything that hasn't been deregulated under Carter.
America saw Ronald Reagan as someone trustworthy. As the host of television's General Electric Theater, his charm kept us from noticing that he was there to sell appliances. As president, he became our national host. But in his portrayal of a statesman, Reagan's policies followed the Powell memo script, serving the big business interests that financed his campaign.
Heritage produced something first for the Reagan administration. And what this was a catalog of how Heritage felt that government programs should be changed, reformed, eliminated, started, etc., to best meet conservative goals.
The newly elected president handed out the Heritage Foundation's mandate for leadership to every member of his cabinet. For the next 8 years, this anti-government policy guide drove the Reagan administration's makeover of federal government from protecting the public good into working for the rich and powerful.
Ronald Reagan is my hero. Why is he my hero? He gave us pride. He gave us loyalty. He gave us patriotism. He brought back our position in the world. He brought us out of darkness and into light.
He cut taxes for those at the top. Instead of balancing the budget, he ran the biggest deficits in history. Then he presided over the passage of a series of tax increases on ordinary people, only he didn't call them that. The Washington Press Corps went along with the White House calling these revenue enhancements.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
It was attacking government, attacking the institutions of government, and trying to make it as a system that doesn't work. And in reality, rich folks don't need governments. They live in their own gated communities. They have their own security. They swim in their own swimming pools. They go to their own private schools. Rich people take care of themselves.
The ideology of the free market that said that if we allow them to just use their own creativity and be able to do what they want, that the wealth that they created would trickle down to create jobs and create consumer goods and make America an even richer and more prosperous society than it was. Well, all that was beautiful theory.
You either believe in it or you don't.
The whole idea of a free market is a myth to begin with. Markets are structured based on laws, and the real issue is who the structure benefits.
There's just no question that when Ronald Reagan came in, the target of Reaganomics was the labor movement.
One of his first acts was to destroy the air traffic controllers, which was a signal to all American businesses that it was open season on unionism.
They are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
They understand that it's not just about labor supporting the interests of members of labor unions, but it has been the labor movement that has supported the interests of all workers. You wouldn't have Social Security, you wouldn't have unemployment compensation, you wouldn't have Medicare, you wouldn't have all of these things, which are not just for labor union members. As the bumper sticker says, they are the people who brought you the weekend.
He was able to pull off an ideological counter-revolution. And by the time he was over, most of the New Deal had been dismantled.
While Reagan was breaking unions and demolishing regulations, he also convinced Congress in 1981 to pass his Economic Recovery Tax Act, cutting the top tax brackets by nearly a third, but raising taxes on the middle class.
By dramatically increasing the Social Security tax, as recommended by Alan Greenspan to Ronald Reagan, we shifted the burden of government. So that today, 70-some percent of Americans pay a heavier share of their income in Social Security and Medicare taxes than they do in income taxes. And we push the burden down. At the same time, at the very, very top, we radically cut taxes so that the 1,000 richest men, women, and children in America face an effective total federal tax rate, Social Security and income taxes, about 17 cents on the dollar, and their average income is $263 million.
After decades of lobbying driven by corporate money, the tax code is now full of loopholes and special deals that help big business avoid paying its fair share. To avoid paying taxes, U.S. corporations have stashed more than $1.5 trillion in offshore accounts.
Corporations only pay 13% of the federal budget's revenues. Out of $2.5 trillion, corporations only pay 13%.
So I just want to list some 10, the 10 worst corporate tax avoiders. ExxonMobil, largest oil company in the world, made $19 billion in profits in 2009. Exxon not only paid no federal income taxes, it actually received $156 million rebate from the IRS over the past 5 years, while General Electric made $26 billion in profits in the United States. It received a $4.1 billion refund from the IRS. So if you're working stiff, you're making $30,000, $40,000 a year, you're paying taxes. But if you're Chevron and you made $10 billion in profits in 2009, you don't have to pay any taxes. You get a $19 million refund. Yeah, let's go after the little kids. Let's go after the elderly. Let's go after the sick. Let's go after the most vulnerable. But apparently in the Senate, we can't ask Chevron to pay taxes.
The Powell memo recommended constant surveillance of content in textbooks, newspapers, magazines, radio, and television, insisting that big business use the media to convince Americans that an end to business regulation would somehow benefit us all. For 38 years, the Federal Communications Commission had enforced the Fairness Doctrine, which mandated that all broadcasts over public airwaves offer a balance of viewpoints. In 1987, Ronald Reagan stopped enforcement of the Fairness Doctrine, opening the floodgates for corporate money to talk directly to America through the media.
A few years ago, studies were showing that of the 350 top radio markets in the country, you had something like 90% of right-wing talk and less than 10% of progressive talk.
Media deregulation is a big story. I think it's a threat to democracy. Most people don't have any idea what's going on.
After his 1992 election, Democratic President Bill Clinton continued to implement key elements of both the Powell memo and the Heritage Foundation's prescriptions for government by and for big business. In 1996, Clinton signed the first major overhaul of telecommunications law in 62 years.
People have to understand that now there are just a handful of corporations that own the media, and every one of them has an agenda. Comcast now owns 51% of our national broadcasting network.
What Rupert Murdoch thinks, right, is more likely to be what you think than anything else.
They missed major stories. We know they missed major stories. And that is all coming home to roost now.
I think the media is awful. Awful. They don't do in-depth reporting. They distort the news story to show the most confrontational headline. They don't do in-depth news gathering.
Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. Our intelligence sources tell us that he has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes suitable for nuclear weapons production.
20 years ago, nobody who was in journalism thought anything of saying to a politician to his face, "Senator, stop lying to the Los Angeles Times. General, you know that's not true. I know that's not true." Today, if you said something like that, you'd be fired. You would be fired. We don't ask tough questions. And we have these orchestrated White House press conferences. And Obama is actually worse than his predecessor, George Bush, on this issue.
All right. So with that, let me see who's on the list. We're going to start with Jake Tapper.
Thank you, Mr. President.
You know, the business press and the financial news networks and certainly in recent years, CNBC, have been cheerleaders for free market ideology and for business and for the business class.
If you take your financial advice from CNBC, you're going to go broke.
Okay, Peter writes, should I be worried about Bear Stearns in terms of liquidity and get my money out of there? No, no, no. Bear Stearns is fine.
Bear Stearns shares down 90% this morning, and it's not just Bear. Pretty much every single bank is plunging in early trade this morning.
But you don't get the information that you need, and you're pretty much on your own. The same thing that's happened in business has happened in broadcasting. It's just completely profit-driven.
U.S. Steel is getting out of the steel business, and they're getting out of this community. And they're saying, goodbye, we had enough, there's no more left, we squeezed the grape, we're going on to greener pastures.
We've seen the acceleration of the hollowing out of America as the most important and powerful industrial society on Earth.
Since 1973, approximately 40 million good-paying American jobs with benefits have been shipped overseas or dismantled by corporations, boosting their own profits at working Americans' expense. Thanks to decades of policy shaped by corporate money, there was nothing to stop them.
There is this notion that this was only a Republican villainy, when, in fact, much of what happened during the 8 years of Bill Clinton.
We seek a new and more open global trading system, not for its own sake, but for our own sake.
I supported NAFTA then, and I supported NAFTA now. I still support NAFTA now for the same reason, or the same reasons. The main one is I, like most economists, generically favor trade liberalization because trade leads to gains on both sides.
As Jorge Castaneda, who was later finance minister of Mexico, once said, he said, NAFTA was an arrangement between the rich and powerful of all three countries, leaving ordinary people out.
What that really means in simple language is that corporations are able to move anywhere in the world they want to seek cheap labor and exploit people and use that as leverage against workers here in the United States of America.
Now, if you just want to get down to brass tacks, if you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south of the border, pay $1 an hour for your labor, have no health care, that's the most expensive single element making a car, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south.
If you look at the statistics since NAFTA, in all three countries, the wages of workers have been stagnant, the productivity of workers has skyrocketed, and workers in all three countries have gone into debt in order to maintain their living standards.
We also saw a massive movement toward unfettered free trade. And the theory of that was that if you create trade agreements with China, where people are paid 40, 50 cents an hour, and you shut down plants in America, and you move to China, and you move to Mexico, that in some way that we haven't quite figured out yet, this is going to be good for the American worker.
For 20 years, the American public believed we could simultaneously outsource all of our jobs and simultaneously maintain our quality of life at home. We thought we could do that. Guess what? No such thing. We can't have our cake and eat it too.
We are eviscerating our manufacturing capability, all in the name of lower prices, all in the name of free trade, all in the name of the market always knows best. The market doesn't know best.
I'm Kim Berry. Through the 1980s, I was living the American dream, and that was really the high point of my career. I didn't know it at the time, but I was earning $50 an hour as a consultant in 97 at Hewlett-Packard when I left HP to do a dot-com venture. And HP at the time said, That's great. If it doesn't work out, you always have a job here. And in fact, whatever you learn in .com, that'll be valuable to your long-term career at HP.
Offshoring of employment has been with us for a very long time, but has mostly been restricted to manufacturing. The new wrinkle is offshoring of services, the number and range and variety of jobs that could, in principle, be done abroad, say over the internet. It's enormous.
What happened while I was out doing the .com, HP started bringing in workers from India because they would work for a lot cheaper. And also they brought them in to train them, to get some foreigners trained so that they could then ship them back to the research and development labs back in India and China.
If you look at it in terms of pure business, they're the right decisions. You go to the lowest labor cost. Okay, in terms of what's the right word, patriotism, they're not.
It will be painful, and for a number of reasons. One of them is going to be large, maybe over the course of the next generation, 30, 40 million jobs. It's important to note this is not either about only low-skilled jobs or only high-skilled jobs. They're all over. If what you do is write computer code, routine computer code, you might as well be anywhere in the world. So it really doesn't matter. So you lose nothing in quality if you move the job from Indiana to India.
Paul Craig Roberts, a co-founder of Reaganomics, feels that big business has gone too far.
All these ladders are being dismantled. Where are the jobs for university graduates? They are now beginning to face the same dilemmas that blue-collar workers face when they lost their $20 an hour manufacturing jobs with their good benefits. And so we have an economy that is starting to impoverish its workforce.
An infinite number of people coming who are taking jobs that pay over $100,000 a year, you know, they're going to pay taxes. We create lots of other jobs around those people. You know, my basic view is that the country should welcome as many of those people as we can get.
And what the corporations are doing, they tell Congress, oh, there's a shortage of engineers. There's a shortage of scientists. We can't find any. This is all an absolute total lie.
With the HR, many corporations will go to any lengths, including these legal but deceptive practices, to hire cheaper foreign labor. Look at this video clip recorded at a seminar conducted by an American law firm for human resources professionals.
And our goal is clearly not to find a qualified and interested U.S. worker. And, you know, that, in a sense, that sounds funny, but it's what we're trying to do here. I get 50 resumes. My God, this is the last thing I want to do is interview these 50 people. Does the law require that I actually interview each and every candidate?
You don't have to interview each and every candidate. If it gets to the point where somebody's looking like they're very qualified, we ask them to have the manager of that specific position step in and go over the qualifications with them. If necessary, schedule an interview, go through the whole process to find a legal basis to disqualify them for this particular position.
The present head of GE said that when he looks at the future of his company, he sees China and China and China. So these guys will go where the cheapest labor is. There is no allegiance to the United States of America.
Since 2002, GE has reduced its American workforce by tens of thousands of people. In 2008, the global conglomerate received a $140 billion bailout from American taxpayers. GE also spends more money lobbying Congress than any other corporation in the world. In 2011, President Barack Obama appointed GE's CEO, Jeffrey Immelt, to run his presidential council on jobs and competitiveness.
Have you ever talked with displaced workers yourself?
Have I ever talked with this? The fact that I'm thinking this means the answer is either no or almost no. I can't offhand remember a case. You know, we professors tend to be ivory tower types.
What they've done for the last 20 years is destroy the ability of people who worked hard and played by the rules to have decent retirements.
Big business was not satisfied with just outsourcing jobs and getting huge tax breaks to increase their profits. Corporations also set their sights on eliminating guaranteed pensions.
Common stock. Do I own any? I don't even know what they are.
Mm-hmm. In the 1950s, stock gets marketed like another consumer item. At the same time, pension funds are starting to change. Why, for example, should a company have to put away that kind of money as a liability to pay off its retired workers when instead it could take some out of the paycheck every week and then make you go invest it yourself? And that's what they did.
So why not put your money to work?
Put my money to work?
That's right, Mr. Finchley. You can own a share of American business.
You know, there's a joke that compensation executives tell each other. What's a four-letter word that starts with an F, ends with a K, and stands for screw your workers? 401K. 401Ks are a subtle kind of pay cut, and they're bad economics. Defined benefit pension plans were on top of your salary.
That meant you worked for a company for 30 years or so. You retired. You knew exactly how much money was going to get paid out of the pension because the company kept this pension fund and it kept enough money in it to pay you out.
Under a 401k plan, you have to save money out of your paycheck, so you have less money. A company may give you a match, but these plans typically save a company 50% or more in a plan. Then
you've been listening to Heist, Who Stole the American Dream and How We Can Get It Back. It's narrated by Tom Hartman. You've been listening to the voice of David K. Johnston at the end there, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist formerly with the New York Times. This documentary is quite remarkable, and we are offering it to you for a contribution of $100. Please call in right now and let us know that you are there. Let us know that you are standing up for independent media. Your call counts. The number to call, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes it possible for WPFW to happen. You've been listening to Heist, Who Stole the American Dream and How We Can Get It Back, a film by Francis Causey and Donald Goldmacher. We ask you to call right now. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Keep these phone calls coming in. Your call makes the difference. You make it possible. It's an honor to be with you. That number again to call to support WBAI. We urge you to go to the phone. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to continue. We urge you to be there. We cannot do it without you, only with you. Your call counts. 212-209-2950. So what is this documentary about? Heist, Who Stole the American Dream, reveals how American corporations orchestrated the dismantling of middle-class prosperity through rampant deregulation, the outsourcing of jobs, tax policies favoring businesses and the wealthy. The collapse of the U.S. economy is the result of conscious choices made over 35 years by a small group, leaders of corporations and their elected allies, and the biggest lobbying interest in Washington, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. To these individuals, the collapse is not a catastrophe, but rather the planned outcome of their long, patient work. For the rest of the country, it's merely the biggest heist in American history. Please call. The number to call is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Give us a call. Let us know you're there. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. Heist, Who Stole the American Dream? Yours for $100. You've been listening to an audio track of it, but it is a 76-minute full video documentary, and we want to send you the DVD as soon as we can. So please call in, fill these phone lines. We can't do this without you. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Give us a call. Let us know you're in the house. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. 212-209-2950. You know, we're on a 100-city tour. Nikki Giovanni rarely talks about the Virginia Tech massacre because she was the professor of the student shooter. But she just opened up as we sat in her office, this university distinguished professor, the great poet Nikki Giovanni. I have been wanting to meet her for so long, so it was an amazing journey. And Colin Goddard came down from Washington, D.C. to
take me on a tour of his campus and to take me to Norris Hall, where he was shot April 16, 2007. He survived with four bullets in his body, three of them still in his body. Actually, one just surfaced, causing him great pain, and he had an operation, had to have that bullet removed. But he is so forthright. He is so matter-of-fact about describing what happened. I mean, 16 people in his French class, his French professor, and eight others in the class were killed. The highest concentration of mortalities during the shooting spree. 32 died in all. There's been a documentary made about Colin called Living for 32 by Governor Cuomo's sister, Maria Cuomo Cole. Colin does not just keep this inside, though. He has gone to work on for the Grady, here in Washington at the Brady Center for campaigning against gun violence. We went down to Blacksburg to talk with Nikki Giovanni, to talk with Colin Goddard, and to take you through what they went through. The number to call is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Give us a call. Let us know you're there. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. We urge you to be there. We cannot do this without you. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Give us a call. Fill these phone lines. If you appreciated today's broadcast, it is so wonderful to be with you. We urge you to go to the phone right now and let us know that you're there. The number to call is 212-209-2950. We urge you to call in right now and let us know you're in the house. We cannot do this without you. Only together, only with you. Your call makes the difference. 212-209-2950. Then we travel through Colorado and Utah, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Oregon, Washington State, as well as Minnesota. And we're back in New York as we go on this 100-city tour. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Your call makes the difference. You make it possible for WBAI to happen. Heist, who stole the American dream. We urge you to call in. We cannot do this without you, only with you. Your call makes a difference. You make it possible. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes the difference. Let us know you are in the house. Please call in right now. Let us know you're there. Please let us know you're standing up for independent media. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Let us know that you're there. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. Your call makes a difference. You make it possible. 212-209-2950. 209-2950. Heist, who stole the American dream, exposes the roots of the American economic crisis and the destruction of the American dream. With clear, fact-driven storytelling, Heist unflinchingly reveals the hollowing out of the U.S. economy, the result of four decades of deregulation, massive job outsourcing, tax policies favoring megacorporations and wealthy elites. Beginning with background on the New Deal, the film explores how FDR's progressive policies were derailed by Ronald Reagan and subsequent presidential administrations, benefiting only the wealthiest investors and CEOs. Through expert testimony, investigative filmmaking, and key archival footage, Heist unfolds critical historical background, beginning with the dismantling of FDR's New Deal, uncovering the ideological influence of the infamous Powell Memo and the Heritage Foundation's mandate for leadership on government reform, and traces both Republican and Democratic allegiance to big business. We urge you to call 212-209-2950. It is a fascinating documentary, a 76-minute video documentary. Maybe get two, pledge $200, give one to a library, a high school, a college library, a public library, maybe a prison library. Get one for the start to stockpile holiday gifts and birthday gifts, gifts of meaning, where you're supporting WBAI and you're getting a gift of information, of empowerment to give to someone. Put them in your closet, take them out one by one so that you don't procrastinate like I can be known to do, procrastinate, and then at the last minute go to a box store, get some product of a sweatshop that you didn't even realize was. You don't care about the gift, but you do care about the person you're giving it to. No. do it the right way, think in advance, make the call that makes a difference, and get gifts of meaning. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please give us a call. Please let us know that you're in the house, that you're standing up for independent media. Your call makes the difference. You make it possible. 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And we'll send you Heist, which unfolds critical historical background, beginning with the dismantling of FDR's New Deal, uncovering the ideological influence of the infamous Powell Memo and the Heritage Foundation's mandate for leadership on government reform, and traces both Republican and Democratic allegiance to big business. Heist exposes the full story, how corporate leaders work with elected politicians of both major parties to create the largest transfer of wealth in history, looting the economy to create a gap between rich and poor previously seen only in impoverished colonial nations. Structured as a political thriller, Heist effectively connects the dots to show audiences how and why we live in an era of class warfare. That's what they say, the filmmakers. They say that they talk about what we can do to restore democracy and economic fairness. 212-209-2950. Let's hear those phone calls raining in. We cannot do this without you, only with you. Your call makes a difference. You make it possible for WBAI to continue. Oh, by the way, we're on this 100-city silenced majority tour. And silenced majority is the title of my new book, written with Dennis Moynihan. Columns over the last 3 years, weekly columns that appear in newspapers throughout the country that deal with everything from the economy to war to Troy Davis's execution, to the Occupy protests in New York and around the country, the Egyptian Revolution, the Arab Spring, and so much more. The silenced majority stories of uprisings, occupations, resistance, and hope. The reason we call it the silenced majority is because I really do think that those who are concerned about war, those who are concerned about the growing inequality in this country, those who are concerned about extreme weather, you know, if only the weathermen on television, on the radio, so often the reason people tune in to TV and radio to find out what they should put on that day. Is it going to rain? Is it going to be cold? Is it going to be boiling hot? If only, in addition to talking about severe weather and extreme weather, put together two other words, global warming, climate change. But those who are concerned about climate change and the fate of the earth and war and growing inequality are not a fringe minority, not even a silent majority, but the silenced majority, silenced by the corporate media, which is why we have to take it back. If you want to get a signed copy of The Silenced Majority, it's just coming out this week. It is yours for a contribution of $75, and that money goes to WBAI. A signed copy, you can give it to someone for the holidays or a birthday gift. We urge you to call in right now. It's the first time we are offering it. We urge you to go to the phone and let us know you are in the house. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Your call makes a difference. You make it possible for WBAI to happen. And speaking of money going to WBAI, if you would like to come to the set of Democracy Now! And watch the broadcast and bring a special guest, it is a whopping contribution that goes directly to WBAI. And I would really look forward to hosting you personally. You come to the set, you bring your partner or a daughter, a son, a mother, a father, an aunt, an uncle. Think of this as it's a reservation for dinner and a show. You bring your special guest, you sit on the set, we serve you fair trade organic coffee or tea, crumpets, muffins. You watch the broadcast. You meet the team that makes Democracy Now! Happen. You meet the guests in studio. Who knows who will be there? Maybe Nikki Giovanni. Maybe Alice Walker. I just cannot believe that in the last week, I've spoken to both great writers in Washington and Arlington at the Fall for the Book Festival in Arlington, where Alice was celebrating 30 years of The Color Purple, to going down to Blacksburg, Virginia, and getting the afternoon with Nikki Giovanni. We'll play you more of the interview. We played you the part where she talked about, well, this rare opening up, because she usually refuses to talk about her student who was the shooter, April 16, 2007, who killed 32 in Blacksburg. But she knew he was trouble from way before. She said she would resign if he wasn't taken out of her class. We urge you to go to the phone right now. The number to call is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to continue. So if you want to come to the set of Democracy Now!, watch the broadcast, meet the team that makes Democracy Now! Happen, meet the guests who are in studio, and then I get to host you for dinner. You and your special guest. We break bread together, kick back. I get to hear your old stories. We toast WBAI. It's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution. If you just gasped, it's a huge amount of money that goes, though, to WBAI to keep it alive. Tax-deductible charitable contribution. Think of it as your year-end giving. And you're keeping it alive for everyone. For people who can't afford to pledge right now, but maybe afforded to last year, they're just in dire straits now. It's an altruistic act to give that support to WBAI. Whether you pledge $25, by the way, or $50, or $75 and get a signed copy of The Silenced Majority, or $100 and get Heist, Who Stole the American Dream and How We Can Get It Back, or $2,000 for dinner and a show. I'd love to host you in New York. You do not have to know when you can do this. Maybe you have friends coming in from another country that you want to bring in 6 months or a year from now. Maybe you cannot even begin to think about this. My colleague Brenda Murat at Democracy Now! Gives you a call in the coming days and says, when would you like to come to the set of Democracy Now! And you might say, I have no idea. You'll email each other back and forth. You'll become a friend of Brenda for sure. And I can't wait to greet you at the door when your day comes and when we get to host you at Democracy Now. If you live in New Jersey or Pennsylvania or Connecticut or New York, I would so love to bring you to the studios, the greenest internet radio TV studios of this country, right in Chelsea, in Manhattan. Please call in right now. Please let us know that you're there. Please let us know that you're standing up for independent media. Your call makes a difference. You make it possible. Make that call right now. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes the difference. We cannot do this without you. Only with you, 212-209-2950. So whether it's $2,000 or whether it is $25, make the call now. If you live in Jersey City or Hoboken or Jamaica, if you live in Flushing or in the Bronx, if you live in the People's Republic of Brooklyn, if you live in the Upper West Side or the Upper East Side, or if you live in Hell's Kitchen or Chelsea or Clinton or the Lower East Side or Alphabet City, or you live in Williamsburg or Fort Greene, we're asking you to call in right now. Let us know that you're there. Long Island, we need you. Red Hook, you're not off the hook till you take it off the hook. And speaking of colors, if you live in the oranges, please make that call right now. If you live in Brownsville, call us right now and let us know you're in the house. Greenpoint, we need you. Greenport, we need you. Blue Point, we need you. Please call in if you think there's a point to WBAI, which I definitely do. Part of the Pacifica Network, founded more than 60 years ago by a war resistor who came out of the detention camp, said there's got to be a media outlet not run by corporations that profit from war, but run by journalists and artists. Please call in right now, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Your call counts. We urge you to call. We ask you to stand up for independent media. We cannot do this without you, only together. 212-209-2950. By the way, if you have friends around the country, send them the segment of our tour that they might want to come out to. Just check it out at tour.democracynow.org. It is fantastic. We're thrilled because we are broadcasting from all these places. Went last night to Virginia Tech, brought you the magnificent voice of Nikki Giovanni. You know, her work is so compelling, and we're going to bring you more of what she had to say. We urge you to go to the phone and let us know you are in the house. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to be there, for WBAI to happen. Set the tone for the rest of the drive, because if we can raise the money that WBAI needs, the drive will be shorter. And we really want to go back to regular programming as soon as possible, though we'll bring you all sorts of specials through this fundraising drive. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes the difference. Let us know you are in the house. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We urge you to be there. We cannot do it without you, only with you. Please call in. Please let us know that you're there. Please let us know that you're standing up for independent media. Your call makes a difference. You make it possible. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Again, Heist exposes the full story, connecting the dots. The movie posits a fair economy requires that those responsible for the crisis be held accountable. Rigorous reforms must be enacted into law. Too big to fail. Corporations must be dismantled, argue the filmmakers. Progressive taxation must be restored. A fair, sustainable local model of economic resilience must be accelerated. Heist is the rallying cry of the 99% who can take this moment in history and transform the American economic and political landscape through information sharing and direct action. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Make that call. Make it now. Let us know that you're there. Let us know that you're standing up for independent media. We urge you to call. We don't have much time, folks. Call in right now. If you live in Long Beach, don't take too long in calling. We need your support. Let's, if you make that phone call, you're ringing for freedom of the media. If you live in Hempstead, if you live in Bayshore, if you live anywhere in Long Island, if you live in Syosset or Huntington in the wonderful Cinema Arts Center there, if you live in Great Neck or Little Neck, please stick your neck out for WBAI. If you live in Roslyn or Roslyn Heights, take WBAI to New Heights or Cambria Heights or Brooklyn Heights. Make the call that makes a difference. Prospect Heights, we need you. We ask you to call. If you live in Westchester or you live in Rockland County, make the call right now. If you live in Spring Valley or if you live in White Plains or you live in Armonk or Hastings on Hudson or Croton on Hudson, if you live on the Upper West Side or in Harlem, if you live in the South Bronx or in Northwest or in Riverdale or along the river, the East River, the Connecticut River, the Hudson River, or the Long Island Sound or the Atlantic Ocean, we ask you to go to the phone or the Great South Bay. Your call makes all the difference. And we'll send you a copy of Heist, Who Stole the American Dream, the 76-minute color documentary, the video documentary, Heist, Who Stole the American Dream, and How We Can Get It Back. There are only two kinds of power in America, posit the filmmakers, organized money and organized people, a film by Francis Causey and Donald Goldknocker. Make that call right now. The film is yours for a $100 contribution that goes directly to WBAI. If you want to get an extra film for another person, someone you care about, who you want to give a gift for the holidays, think ahead, stockpile meaningful gifts, gifts of reason, gifts for the season, gifts that matter, that will educate, that will empower. Keep them in your closet. Take them out one by one or give it to a library. Call in right now. Get pledge $500. Get five copies of Heist and give them out. But call in right now. And speaking of films, again, get out to the Quad only until October 4th. It's Juan Gonzalez's film, Harvest of Empire, the untold story of Latinos in America. Is it available? Is it going to be showing there? So please call in. We cannot do this without you, only with you. Your call makes the difference. You make WBAI happen. Please call in. Fill these phone lines. We urge you to go to the phone. We cannot do it without you, only with you. Your call makes the difference. Call in right now, 212-209-2950. Let us know that you're there. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. We only have 30 seconds to go. Make the call now, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes the difference. $100 for a Heist, Who Stole the American Dream, $75 for a signed copy of my new book. It's called The Silenced Majority. Please call in right now. $2,000 for dinner and a show, or $25 or $50. Just become a member of WBAI. We need your support. We ask you to be there. 212-209-2950. Thank you to Julie Crosby and Dennis Moynihan and Miguel Noguera and Steve Martinez and Mike Burke and Renee Feltz and Dina Guzder and Amy Littlefield and Sam Alkoff. Keep those phone calls coming in. We cannot do this without you, only with you. 212-209-2950. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Listeners, listen up. The Community Advisory Board, or the CAB, is a group of listeners who meet every Sunday to help WBAI. The Pacifica National Board has given us 60 days to prove that WBAI can be self-sufficient. 60 days. Our station needs actual work done, hands and bodies, at the WBAI office in Brooklyn, New York. Now is the time to move from listening to action. Come and do some work. We need to pack and mail premiums, call listeners to solve premium problems, complete inventorying, and send out BAI buddy packs. Commit to 12 hours a week for 6 weeks, or whatever you can. This week, you can show up from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Next week, the hours will change, so stay tuned. WBAI's heart and soul is the listener. So bring your body, heart, and soul to 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, you can send an email to volunteer@wbai.org.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Before you continue on with your day, I'd like to ask you to visit the website at WBAI.org and consider becoming a BAI buddy. For as little as $10 a month, you can help the station and make a recurring donation on behalf of this program. As a BAI buddy, you receive a WBAI membership card, as well as very nice discounts at area museums and various local facilities and selected WBAI-supported events. And all donate a free CD, no charge to the station. It's a safe, secure, and easy way for you to support this commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station, WBAI.org. Thank you for your support.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We turn to Black Power Mixtape, a film featuring rare archival footage shot between 1967 and 1975, including some of the leading figures of the Black Power movement in the United States, like Stokely Carmichael and Bobby Seale, Huey P. Newton, Angela Davis, and Eldridge Cleaver. The footage was shot by two Swedish journalists and was discovered in the basement of Swedish public television 30 years later. The renowned actor and activist Danny Glover co-produced the Black Power mixtape. I sat down with him at the Sundance Film Festival when the film first premiered in Park City, Utah in 2011 and asked him to talk about the film.
Certainly, it's extraordinary. It's almost, when you think about something like, let's face it, that we're dealing with now in terms of WikiLeaks, you know, and how information is uncovered. This film is about information or documentary filmmakers and interviews with members of people involved in the Black Power movement.
Now, this was found in the basement?
It's found in the basement of Swedish television. It had been aired only once as a series, and these incredibly rich interviews, just from 1967 to 1975, rich interviews of men and women who were involved in the Black Power movement, but also Swedish television coming to the United States and assessing themselves and interviewing people about the movement. So you would have an interview, a young sister at the Black Panther Party office in New York who talks about the revolution, you know, or you would have a free breakfast for children program, or you have all this rare footage of Bobby Seale's in somewhere in Europe. So this is what this is about. So it's a compilation of all these interviews, all these documentary films that we've done, all this rich archival information about the Black Power movement.
Let's play a clip of Stokely Carmichael.
Now, let us begin with the modern period of, I guess we could start with 1956 for our generation. This was the beginning of the rise of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King decided that in Montgomery, Alabama, Black people had to pay the same prices on the buses as did white people, but we had to sit in the back. And we could only sit in the back if every available seat was taken by a white person. If a white person was standing, a black person could not sit. So Dr. King and his associates got together and said, "This is inhuman. We will boycott your bus system." Now understand what a boycott is. A boycott is a passive act. It is the most passive political act that anyone can commit, a boycott. Because what the boycott was doing was simply saying, "We will not ride your buses." No sort of antagonism. It was not even verbally violent. It was peaceful. Dr. King's policy was that nonviolence would achieve the gains for black people in the United States. His major assumption was that if you are nonviolent, if you suffer, your opponent will see your suffering and will be moved to change his heart. That's very good. He only made one fallacious assumption. In order for nonviolence to work, your opponent must have a conscience. The United States has none. Has none.
That was Stokely Carmichael.
Yes.
In this film, Black Power Mixtape. Rare footage of Stokely Carmichael, who later came to be known as Kwame Ture, going to Sweden.
Yes.
And talking about, well, perhaps the differences between him and Dr. King, talking about the importance of action.
Yes. Yeah. Well, one of the things that, I mean, is you, this is very interesting. We're talking about 1967. So much has happened within the last 4 years since the passage of the Voters' Rights Act, the riots in Watts, the riots in Detroit, the riots in Newark. And here's Stokely Carmichael. It so happens that I first met Stokely Carmichael in 1967 when I was a student at San Francisco State. San Francisco State was very unique in the sense that a number of the members of SNCC who now decided were going back to school came to San Francisco and resettled in San Francisco. So Stokely, Ralph Featherstone, H. Rap Brown were out in San Francisco State on a regular basis. And so to hear him talk about really what was at 1967 the beginning of his own transition, his own movement from certainly the nonviolence. We had to split in SNCC by that time. We had the removal of white members of SNCC, and all those things were happening at this particular time. And he begins to announce his new path, respectful of King, and I'm saying respectful of King, very respectful of King, as they all were. You know, remember, it was King and Harry Belafonte who were who initiated the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, put up the resources for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and not only that, gave it life. So here's the prodigal son breaking away at this particular moment. And certainly King had been to Sweden. King had traveled to Scandinavian countries to raise money for the movement, which is something that Harry prompted him to do as well. Harry Belafonte prompted him to do.
And, you know, of course, Dr. King had won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, but the footage in Black Power Mixtape of Dr. King, the King of Sweden, raising money for him, and Harry Belafonte in Sweden together.
Yes. It's quite remarkable because it was Harry's suggestion that that they go to Sweden to raise money. Harry, and certainly when he first met King in 1957, Harry, one of the most popular artists in the world at the particular time, was going to use his influence in the service of Dr. King. And certainly he had very strong connections with Sweden and other Scandinavian countries as well. So you hear, this is an incredible moment, you know, and this is something that people don't know about often, you know?
And now you, at this time, as you said, San Francisco State, people have heard a lot about Columbia and the student strikes, but the first big shutdown of a university is your own, and you were one of the leaders of it.
Well, San Francisco State, 1968. And a part of this was, we're all moving in some sort of way. The BSU, when I came to San Francisco State in 1966, it was beginning to make its own transition, you know, and why this film was important for me was the fact that it is also my moment or my transition as well. I had been raised, born and raised through the civil rights movement. And now as the Black Power movement emerged, we begin to assume that. In fact, we had invited Amiri Baraka out to San Francisco State in the spring of 1967. So San Francisco State,
we started becoming
the Black Art Movement as well. So here we have the Black Power Movement as we identified by Stokely and the Black Panther Party, etc. And you had students who were involved as well, and myself and others And the strike came out of that. The strike came was an aggressive move by the Black Student Union. And we were fortunate to get allies in terms of the Asian Student Association and Hispanic Student Association, and also progressive white students that made it successful.
You were fighting for Black studies at San Francisco State just recently in Tucson, right at the same time of the horrendous shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a headline in the paper that day about how they were shutting down
Well,
but you guys really started the activism for it.
We're still, it's 41 years old, the ethnic studies program. And what was unique is the first ethnic studies program, the only one in any major university in the country. But interesting enough, the first time that I saw Huey P. Newton and had any idea who the Black Panther Party was in 1966, when he came to the Black House and was reading poetry at the Black House. Huey P. Newton, that's the footage we should have had, reading poetry at the Black House. And at the Black House, Ed Bullins lived, Eldridge Cleaver lived at the Black House. There were two people who lived at the Black House. So there was, you could see this, and now we're looking, certainly looking back in retrospect, but you could see this emerging movement happening around really what I believe was extraordinary moments of, as I said before, redefining and reimagining democracy, organizing, using those skills. Stokely was an organizer. Those members of STIX were organizing. So with the Black Power movement was about extending that whole sense of organizing and community organizing.
So Danny Glover is President Obama, or was, a community organizer in the South Side of Chicago. But he's taken a very different path.
Well, you make choices, certainly. I come out of community service and community development as well. You know, I worked for the Model Cities Program and the Office of Community Development in San Francisco. I was evaluation specialist and program manager in the Model Cities Program from 1972 to 1978. And so through 1977, rather. And certainly, if you were able to, and this was a very key moment, because this also, as I think about it right now, it also is along the same lines, the parallels what's happening in the film, that there was an extraordinary level of grassroots democracy happening in communities like the Mission District in San Francisco and the Baby Hunters Point District in San Francisco. It's extraordinary. And certainly it was fueled, of course, by, I think, the sense of organizing that came out of the Civil Rights Movement, and I think also was translated into the Black Power Movement, the sense of organizing, the sense of empowerment that people could be the architects for change. And this was happening in all over the country. So when you look at Black Power mixtape, you're able to kind of reflect on a moment and understand the their core values of that moment. You know, yeah. I mean, it was James Brown who at the same time came out and said, "I'm Black and I'm proud." At the same time, so all these particular energy was happening, and certainly. For them to be able to capture this, the Swedes be able to capture it, and looking from the outside in was a critical part of this. They were able to see this from the outside and ask very, sometimes very innocent questions. That's certainly that interview, that question response by Angela to violence was extraordinary.
Let's go to that clip.
Yeah, but the question is more, how do you get there? You get there by confrontation, violence?
Oh, is that the question you were asking?
Yeah.
You ask me, you know, whether I approve of violence. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense at all. Whether I approve of guns. I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. Some very, very good friends of mine were killed by bombs that were planted by racists. I remember from the time I was very small. I remember the sounds of bombs exploding across the street, our house shaking. I remember my father having to have guns at his disposal at all times because of the fact that at any moment we might expect to be attacked. The man who was at that time in complete control of the city government, his name was Bull Connor, would often get on the radio and make statements like, niggers have moved into a white neighborhood, we better expect some bloodshed tonight. And sure enough, there would be bloodshed. After the four young girls who lived next door to me, I was very good friends with the sister of another one. My sister was very good friends with all three of them. My mother taught one of them in her class. My mother, in fact, when the bombing occurred, one of the mothers of one of the young girls called my mother and said, can you take me down to the church to pick up Carol? We heard about the bombing, and I don't have my car. And they went down, and what did they find? They found limbs and heads strewn all over the place. And then after that, in my neighborhood, all of the men organized themselves into an armed patrol. They had to take their guns and patrol our community every night because they did not want that to happen again. I mean, that's why when someone asked me about violence, I just find it incredible. What it means is that the person who's asking that question has absolutely no idea what black people have gone through, what black people have experienced in this country since the time the first black person was kidnapped from the shores of Africa.
That's Angela Davis back 40 years ago, in tape that was found in the basement of Swedish Public Television that has just been made into a remarkable film called Black Power Mixtape. In fact, her face with her famous afro is the poster of Black Power Mixtape. Yeah. Talk about this point that she has raised about how you raise the issue of violence.
Well,
Jenny Glover.
It's really interesting because let's go back just a step back and think about all these young students, the Bob Moseses, the Fannie Lou Hamers, the Diane Nashes and Stokely Carmichael, and all these people had gone through extreme periods of violence in the South, from the integration of lunch counters to the burning and bombing of buses and the freedom riots. And even as they organized, had been beaten, jailed. I mean, it's not uncommon. And when we look at the murder of the three civil rights workers, Sworn and Goodman and Cheney, they're all not uncommon to face extraordinary, extreme terrorism and violence. And to be able to kind of now with that, as young people assume another kind of position and understand violence in a different kind of way and reflect on that violence in a different kind of way.
It was terrorism.
It was terrorism. It was terrorism. I was even talking with Bob Moses and he said, when you talk about terrorism, I experienced that.
You've been listening to Danny Glover and we're urging you to go to the phone. We ask you to stand up for independent media. The number to call for WBAI. Please call in right now. Fill these phone lines. Let us know you're in the house. The number to call is 516-516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to happen. You don't have to call long distance. That number is the number that WBAI uses. It is its lifeline for your support. If you'd like to listen to the whole interview with Danny Glover, of which we played a portion, excerpts, you can get that interview for $75. If you want to get the documentary Black Power Mixtape, it's yours for $75. Amazing documentary. That's what Danny was talking about. The documentary that has won many awards now, one of the Sundance selections of 2011, the film featuring rare archival footage shot between 1967 and 75, including some of the leading figures of the Black Power movement in the United States, like Stokely Carmichael, Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, Angela Davis, Eldridge Cleaver. The footage shot by two Swedish journalists discovered in the basement of Swedish public television 30 years later. We urge you to call in right now. We cannot do this without you. The number to call, 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Get the documentary for $75 contribution. Get the conversation with Danny Glover, the co-producer with Jocelyn Barnes of Black Power Mixtape. The conversation that we had at Sundance Film Festival headquarters for a $75 contribution. Put them together, $10 a month or $120. Both DVDs are yours, the film and the interview. The number to call is 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. Make that call. Fill these phone lines. We cannot do it without you. Please call in. Let us know that you're there. 516-620-3602. Make that call right now, and we'll send you the documentary for just $75. You become a member of WBAI, and you get Black Power Mixtape. You're listening on the radio. You hear the audio track of video footage, and both the interview with clips of the film and the film itself. $120 for both. That number again, 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Please make your call. $120 for both. That's $10 a month. If you live in Hempstead, Long Island, or Hollis, Queens, or you live in Hoboken, New Jersey, or you live in Harlem in Manhattan, we ask you to call right now. The number to call is 516-620-3602. Hopog and Hicksville, you are not off the hook. Speaking of which, Red Hook, you aren't either. If you live in Greenpoint or Blue Point or the Oranges in New Jersey, or Mars Plains, Marstown, Mars Township, Parsippany, Whippany, White House Station, we're asking you to call in right now and let us know that you are there. Dover, Chatham, Chester, Montclair, Upper Montclair, Patterson. Please call in. Englewood, Maple, would you call? We ask you to call in right now. We'll send you Black Power Mixtape for a $75 contribution. Keep the phone calls coming in. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. We don't have much time today. I played much longer of the interview than I actually planned to. But, you know, I get caught up in it too, and I sit back and I listen to Danny Glover. You get the documentary, you get the conversation, or you get either one for $75 together for $120 or $10 a month. WBAI is in the most dire shape it's ever been in. Yes, we have to pay the rent atop the Empire State Building for the transmitter. That's first and foremost. That's tens of thousands of dollars a month. Even that is difficult. So every penny helps. 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. We need your help. And if you want to do dinner and a show, it is a great way to support WBAI. In fact, it's a $2,000 contribution. I know that's a huge contribution, but know that it's tax deductible. It's a charitable contribution. Just know that and know you're keeping it alive for people who can't afford to pledge but are deeply concerned about the future of WBAI and want to ensure its future. You know, for the more than 50 years, millions of people have supported WBAI to keep this independent media outlet alive. It's more important than ever. Even with the whole, with the internet, you know, there is a digital divide and people still listen to the radio, and BAI is ever more important in this time of corporatization and privatization to have independent media. I think the media can be the greatest force for peace on earth. Instead, the corporate networks wield it as a weapon of war. We can do so much better, and that's what we try to do on WBAI. Please call. If you want to do dinner and a show and hang out together, you and your special guest, maybe your partner or daughter or son, maybe you want to celebrate a birthday, graduation, and anniversary, I'd love to celebrate with you and keep WBAI alive with you. please call in right now. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Keep the phone calls coming in. We need your support. We ask you to be there. If you do dinner and a show, you don't have to know when you can do it. Just say, I want dinner and a show. Then my colleague Brenda will give you a call in the coming days, say, when do you want to come to the set of Democracy Now? When do you want to have dinner together? And you'll let her know. And if you say, I have no idea right now, that's fine. You can call her back or you can email. And when you're ready, I fix my schedule around yours. I make sure that we make this happen. BAI gets the money, that $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution. Please call. Please fill the phone lines, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. Make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to happen. By the way, you can also pledge online at givetowbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Give2wbai.org. It really matters. Fill the phone lines. Call in. Let us know you're there. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. Make that call right now. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602, and we'll send you a copy of this amazing documentary. Please call in. Let us know that you are there. It features Erykah Badu and Harry Belafonte and Kathleen Cleaver and Angela Davis and Robin Kelly and Tlaib Kweli and Melvin Van Peebles, Senya Sanchez, Bobby Seale, Huey P. Newton, William Consular, Emile D'Antonio, the filmmaker, and Angela Davis and Stokely Carmichael, also known as Kwame Ture, Eldridge Cleaver, Kathleen Cleaver. You know, their voices of the past and the voices of those that are alive today. Black Power Mixtape 67 to 75, a film by Goran Hugo Olsen, who was the Swedish filmmaker today, who found this footage and said, this is unbelievable that we have in Swedish television the footage of a movement, scores of hours of this gold mine of information. Black Power Mixtape, examining the evolution of the Black Power movement in the Black community and diaspora from 67 to 75. The film combining music, startling 16-millimeter footage lying undiscovered in the cellar of Swedish television for 30 years, contemporary audio interviews from leading African-American artists, activists, musicians, and scholars. It's an archive and music-driven documentary examining the evolution of the movement. We urge you to call in right now. We ask you to stand up for independent media. Call in, fill the phone lines. The number to call, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. This film, at the end of the 60s, early 70s, Swedish interest in the civil rights movement, the U.S. anti-war movement peaked. With a combination of commitment and naivete, Swedish filmmakers traveled across the Atlantic to explore the Black Power movement, which was being alternately ignored or portrayed in the U.S. media as violent, nascent terrorist movement. Despite the obstacles they were confronted with, both from conservative white American power establishment and from radicalized movement members themselves, the Swedish filmmakers did not cease their investigation, ultimately forming bonds with key figures in the Black Power movement based on their common objective of realizing equal rights for all. So the filmmaker Goran Hugo Olsen brings this newly discovered footage to life, introducing it to a new generation across the world in a penetrating examination through the lens of Swedish filmmakers of the Black Power movement from 67 to 75 and its worldwide resonance today. Please call in. Please fill the phone lines with your support. We cannot do it without you. $75, you get Black Power Mixtape, the documentary. $75, you get the DVD of the interview I do with Danny Glover with the clips of the film. Please call in. We cannot do this without you. Only together. Keep the phone calls coming in. We need your support. We could really use a dinner and a show contribution today. Please call 516-620-3602 or give to WBAI.org. Please call in. Please let us know that you're there. Please let us know you're standing up for independent media. Make that call right now. Fill the phone lines. Your call makes a difference. Please let us know you're there. Please let us know that you're standing up for independent media. Please call 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. Please call in. Let us know that you're there. Let us know that Democracy Now! Matters to you. Fill the phone lines. That's right. Call in. We've got a number of people calling in. It's the final time, folks. We only have a minute to go. $120. You get both the DVD interview and the documentary. That's $120 or $10 a month. Or pledge $75 for Black Power Mixtape. Please call in right now. We cannot do this without you, only with you. Fill the phone lines. The number to call is 516-620-3602. And final time, if you want to come for dinner and a show, I'd love to host you here in New York. You sit on the set of Democracy Now!, watch the broadcast, meet the team that makes it happen, meet the guests in studio. We tour you through the greenest internet TV radio studio in the country. And then I host you personally for dinner. And I can't wait to do that. Please call in 516-620-3602. I celebrate with you and whoever you choose to bring. I can't wait. It's a $2,000 contribution that goes directly to BAI, or pledge $25 for Democracy Now! Bumper sticker. Final time, $75 for the remarkable award-winning documentary Black Power Mixtape. $75 contribution, $120 for the documentary and the interview. Please call 516-620-3602 or go to online and pledge at givetowbai.org. That's give number two, wbai.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, we seem to have run out of pre-recorded stuff with about 2.5 minutes to go. So let me tell you that in addition to the phone number that Amy was giving you there, the pledge line actually for this current fund drive is actually our good old number, 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950. Robert Knight is off this week. My name is Jim Freund. I've been off almost for like 3 weeks, although I've given you a few pre-recorded shows, and Max Schmid, thank you, Max, was covering for me previously. I need to set up my show shortly, and I am and I gotta do some other things before that happens. So I'm going to put out a couple more promos, and then Hour of the Wolf commences.
Yo, this is G Love on W.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Archives. I'm your host, Tony Ryan. Our woman of interest as part of the Black History series is Eartha Kitt. She was born...
Okay, well, I'm obviously, again, a little bit ahead. That's a preview of what goes on at 5 a.m. And, well, I only have 30 seconds to go before Hour of the Wolf will begin. So let me just again tell you, if there's any of the programming here at WBAI that is meaningful to you, and I dare say that we do enough different types of programs that some of it is going to be meaningful, do give a call now. Give a pledge now. In fact, I suggest pledge $10, the first of 12 $10 pledges you'll make. That's becoming a BAI buddy, $10 a month. That to us is $120 a year, and that gets you all kinds of special benefits. And you do that by calling 212-209-2950. And as it is now 1:30 in a few seconds, time to start my program. Thank you. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a live edition. My name is Jim Freund. This is generally a weekly program of science fiction, fantasy, imagination, and enchantment. This morning, we have, well, some of the usual agenda, and some of different agenda. Not all pitching, not all the time. It's 1:30-something in the morning. But it's nevertheless proper BAI stuff. Stay tuned. Okay, well, once again, welcome. We have had issues here in New York City called snow. And I've had to take snow days for about the last 3 weeks. And as I have been learning a little bit more about how to really produce at home, largely because I have been hosting a podcast in recent times, by the way. It's called Lightspeed, lightspeedmagazine.com, and we have a new story every week read for you by some really wonderful Audi Award and Grammy Award nominated readers, narrators, as they are called. And I get to host. It's a lot of fun. I get paid only slightly more than I get paid at WBAI, and as you can imagine, at WBAI, I am, of course, unpaid. But at any rate, So I've been learning a little bit more about producing at home, and 3 weeks ago I rebroadcast the Ken Liu interview. And by the way, next Tuesday's Lightspeed is a Ken Liu short story read by Paul Bamer. Paul Bamer is this wonderful narrator, and I was talking to Sam Miller, whose name is going to come up again a little later. And he had a short story in there, and I told him, oh yeah, this guy Paul Bamer read your short story on Lightspeed. And he said, Paul Bamer from Star Trek? I'm like, really? I didn't know that. Oh, yeah, he's like done like more Star Trek episodes than any other actor playing all these different roles. And I looked it up, and darn if he wasn't right. So I get to edit this guy, although this guy needs virtually no editing because he does what they call punch and roll broadcast, where you punch in, you don't hear the outtakes. Gives me theoretically less work to do unless there's a mistake, which there often is, in which case there's even that much more work to do. I have to actually assemble words. Sometime in the near future, I'm actually going to get some of these narrators and people either on the phone or in New York to talk all about the business of audiobooks and professional podcasts and things like that, because it's really fascinating and, for me, a new world. And sooner or later, as I've been promising, there will be an Hour of the Wolf podcast, even if it's merely a rebroadcast of Hour of the Wolf. Last week I could have made it in, but given the weather reports, it was highly unlikely that I would be able to make it out. So Max Schmid filled in for me last week. So we also missed movie reviews from Dan Persson. So in just a little while, we are going to hear two reviews. One of a film called After the Dark, and the other, from what I understand, but I haven't heard the review yet, humorless remake of RoboCop. But I have, two announcements to make. One of them for tomorrow night. And these are both very, very cool. But the one for tomorrow night is also, as mentioned, very, very cool. At the Brooklyn Museum on Eastern Parkway, which is now not all that far from WBAI's offices. Not next door, but on a nice day. If you wanted a long walk, you could do it, right? There is a new exhibit opening up, a fantastic journey for Afrofuturists. N.K. Jemisin, known to us on WBAI when she comes on the air as Nora, poet and professor Mendy D. Lewis, who I have not met, I don't believe, artist and writer Kiini Ibura Salam, who was reading at the KGB Fantastic Fiction Series just hours ago and was on this program about 6 weeks ago, and writer and storyteller E.B. Zoboi. I hope I did not destroy her name. I've met her once. I really would like to have her on the air. We'll use audio, which, by the way, I supplied some of, and video clips to engage in conversation with Octavia Butler's fantastic ideas, visions, and brilliance. Now, going off script here, I will tell you that Octavia Butler is one of the great science fiction writers of the 20th century. She died way too young of she died from a fall. She hit her head. This is actually about 2 months after I'd done an interview with her, and we cut the interview short because I knew that she was going to come back to New York in about 3 months, and she promised me she'd come and do the show again live. That would have been our fifth interview. But alas, there were issues. And she was already getting a bit of vertigo, something that she had always dealt with. And when we did this interview, and she died shortly after, but she left behind her a legacy of science fiction that will always be with us. The copy that they gave us is Octavia E. Butler was a novelist who began her writing career. See, I wouldn't say just not novelist, you know, right there. It's like some of my kindred, one of her best things ever, was originally a short story, Kindred. Anyway, Octavia E. Butler was a novelist who began her writing career in the 1970s and changed the face of who a science fiction writer could be. Her books blended elements of science fiction, spiritualism, and social commentary. Her first novel, Pattern Master, 1976, led to the 5-volume Patternist series. Butler went on to write several other novels, including Kindred, Parable of the Sower, and Parable of the Talents. She continued to write and publish until her death in February 24th, 2006 in Seattle, Washington. I would append this. There was a 10-year period where Octavia had writer's block. And that writer's block ended with a novel called Fledgling, which was she was touring to promote Fledgling, which is why she had come to New York at that point. When Parable of the Talents came out, I actually did an interview with her in my house. It was a wonderful thing to be sitting there with, you know, hosting Octavia. It was very, very cool. So there will be a panel tomorrow night at the... you see, now I'm sorry because I printed out the stuff on the Facebook page, but it does not actually tell us much about the event. I have all of the background of the various people. But let me tell you, I know it's at 7 o'clock tomorrow at the Brooklyn Museum. It's practically in the lobby. Once you go in, you will see. I suggest showing up early. Brooklyn Museum is at 200 Eastern Parkway, Brooklyn, New York. Go to Facebook, pardon me, and look up the name of the event is A Fantastic Journey for Afrofuturists. If you type that in Facebook, it will take you to the events page and you will get all the information. You can join.